Hello, and welcome to the Beacon Group's Noon Step Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Desiree, and I'm an alcoholic. In an effort to lessen distractions to others and to respect our speakers, you will not be able to unmute yourself during the meeting. Let's start this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. AA Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend, but we ask that only alcoholics participate. If you are new to AA or new to the Beacon Group, we strongly recommend home group membership and sponsorship. If you are new or not so new and looking for a sponsor, please put your name and number in the chat. If you have worked all 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, have had a spiritual experience and awakening, and are willing to sponsor, please also put your name and number in the chat. The chat will remain open during the meeting except while the speaker is sharing. Also in the chat, you will find our AA quote of the day. The quote source will always be from AA literature. Our speaker will share for 30 minutes on the step of the day, which I will time. Then we will split into breakout rooms for small group discussions. Each group has a moderator who will divide the time equally and invite each person to share. Questions are encouraged during the sharing part of the meeting. When you share, please be sure your environment is quiet and free of distractions. Breakout room discussions end at 12:54, followed by day counts, announcements, and the Lord's Prayer. And I have asked Bob to read the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yeah, thanks. My name's Bob. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. These are the 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Ten, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Thanks for letting me be of service.
Thank you so much, Bob. Today, we will hear a talk on steps four and five with a focus on resentment. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Step five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Please give a warm welcome to Reggie W. from Los Angeles, California. Welcome, Reggie.
Thank you. My name is Reggie White. I'm an alcoholic. Excuse me. And I want to thank Sherry for inviting me out to share this afternoon, this morning, rather. And I hope somebody has their book handy. I'm going to read something from page 66 in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous to start off. And in our Never Too Early Big Book workshop, we're on the fourth step. And what we did, we got to this paragraph when we were reading on the fourth step, and we were asked to do it as a question to ourselves, right? And it started like this. It is plain that a life that includes deep resentment, and we were asked, is it plain, right? And so we were asked, each person asked themselves that question, and I'll read the paragraph. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal, for when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again. And to us, to drink is to die. And now I need to tell a little bit about myself so then we can see whether this paragraph relates at all. So whether or not I can answer that question. And I came to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous on February 7th of 1987. I walked in a little bit more dead than alive, and you guys brought me back to life. I came in following my brothers, Ralph and Ronald. I had no idea what AA was. I had no idea what recovery was, rehab. I'd never heard of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, never heard of Bill W., never heard of, I'd never heard of anybody trying to stop. What I came in there for, because I had a bunch of people who were after me because I owed them a lot of money. I had this girl's car. I needed to get the car to the girl. One of my brothers, Ralph, agreed to return the car, but the condition of him returning the car was me going into a Salvation Army Harbor Light Center. And I went in there, and I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I was introduced to it, it was fascinating, right? And I stayed there because I had nowhere else to go. Had I had resources, I probably would have stayed there. And I probably would have just regrouped like I always did and went back to my life, right? But I stayed in there and I caught alcoholism. I went to a place called 9604 South Figueroa, where people were really working the program of recovery. And I fell in love with you guys because everyone was so kind. I fell in love before I knew really what was going on in the fellowship. I didn't even want this thing because I started reading the Big Book, and it said the only hope of the chronic alcoholic is total abstinence. And I didn't want to have anything to do with total abstinence. I thought it was a scam. I thought it was a bait and switch, and I wanted to leave, but I had nowhere to go. I stayed, and then I got fortunate. My brothers Ralph and Ronald had come in front of me. I came in February of 87. Ronald had come in July of 86, and Ralph had come in, I believe, in October of 86. And so now we started the Never Too Early. They started. They came up with the idea along with our friend Strange, and they started the Never Too Early Big Book Workshop in November of 1987. And by starting that Big Book Workshop at my mom's house, we actually started going through steps. So early in my sobriety, about 10 months in, I actually started taking these steps. See, I came in here on a real high bottom, and I wasn't really, really, well, I guess I was desperate in my own way. I thought I was, it's a trip how you think you're desperate until you really get desperate. Yeah, I thought I was desperate. And I started taking these steps like my life depended on it, because my life got so much better so fast. All of my life, I've been drinking and using, all of my adult life. When I went to college at age 17. I took my first real drink at age 17, one that I bought and one that I actually took a drink. And then I mixed in, you know, little various other little things, you know, weed, stuff like that, whatever else I mixed in. But all of my adult life from when I went to college, everything I had done under the influence because I fell in love with it. And so I thought I learned how to be a man. I thought I learned how to grow up. I thought I learned how to pay bills. Actually, I learned how to not be a man, how to not grow up, and I learned how to not pay bills. And I learned how to not live life and be responsible. But then in Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys taught me all those things. And my life took off and it got really good, really fast, really big, right? I got a really good job because I came in here on a high bottom. And everything was good. worked the steps, did all 12 steps, came out of there. My life got really good, really fast, got a family, ended up having a child, right? And then the bottom fell out, right? My daughter got sick, and then she went through a situation where she was given bad medication, and she was tortured 4 months, and then she died a hard death, a death she shouldn't have died. And so now I get a resentment at God, right? I'm pissed at God because I'm thinking, wait a minute, I've turned my life around. I'm helping people. I'm doing good things. Where the hell is God in this, right? God is supposed to step up. I'm praying. Well, I start praying again once she got sick. I stopped all that stuff, right? But at any rate, I started to get, that's when I got a real deep resentment. That resentment that they talk about. Because the worst kind of resentment for alcoholics like me are justified resentment. And I was totally justified. Had done nothing wrong. And neither had my daughter. My daughter had done nothing wrong. And in my mind, what kind of God would think it's okay for a 4-year-old girl to be tortured for 4 months and then killed? And I'm doing everything I possibly can to save this little girl. And now I got to turn to God, right? And now I turn to God, like I'm all, see, I grew up, the way I grew up, the way our mom raised all of us, it was 6 boys, and we were always raised that the teachers were right. That you got teachers thought had our best interests at heart. We were raised, we kind of knew the police didn't really have our best interests at heart. We were black and whites in the 60s, okay? So that went out the window. But we did think people in the hospitals, especially like doctors, have our best interests at heart. We thought that doctors, especially with a kid, right, that they were definitely gonna, like the Hippocratic Oath, first do no harm, right? And so we trusted doctors, we trusted teachers, to a certain extent we trust. In other words, we were brought up to trust authority figures. And my resentment started to grow. It grew on God, but then my resentment started to grow even more. What got worse is then there was a trial because we had a medical malpractice trial. And as we got more information and all the stuff that came out in the trial, it came out that the hospital where my daughter ended up dying, when they had come out and told us we just need to do exploratory surgery, it turned out they had made a money decision and they had found out that they had made a mistake and that my daughter, that the only way she could have lived is if we had had a transplant, right? A kidney transplant, which I could have given her one, my wife could have given her one, my son could have given her one. 3 of us right there, but they didn't tell us that. Because they would have been on the hook. They would have been liable for unlimited amounts of money, whereas if she died, it would have been only $250,000. And so they made a decision basically to kill my daughter. And the resentment grew and grew and grew. And the resentment consumed me. And the resentment was everything. And then I went and I drank. I lasted for a long time with that resentment, right? But the resentment was consuming me. And then I went and I drank, right? I went to a bar and I drank finally. It's funny, when I have a resentment like that, it could be against somebody, a girlfriend who dumps me and I'm pissed off at her or she's cheating on me or, like women when your husband is cheating or something or when you justify anger, when you've been raped, when you've been molested, when you have something happen to your child, like happened to my child, when you have things that are totally justified and those things grow in my mind, but the last thing on my mind is a drink. I don't think I'm going to go drink. I think I'm not going to. I talk to sponsees all the time. And they say, well, I'm pissed off and I don't want to do this and that. And I'm like, I need you to go work with others. I need you to go talk with others. I need you to work. Write out this resentment work. No, the last thing I'm worried, don't worry, I'm not going to drink. That's the last thing on my mind. What was the last thing on my mind? And then that's why I have to go to this paragraph, because what I didn't know is that resentment was going to consume me for 16 years after probably about 20 years total, right? I I was down. I relapsed, and I drank and used for at least 16 years before I made it back to you guys. And I stayed angry at God, and I stayed angry at life, and I stayed angry at you guys. So now I go back to that paragraph that I read earlier on page 66, where I said we ask ourselves that question in Never Too Early Big Book Workshop. And we have 450 people on Sunday mornings going through the Big Book. And when we asked that question, everybody that raised their hand, they were saying, well, it's not plain to me that a life includes deep resentment. It was only a theory, and it wasn't something that they had to live through. And I was the only one that actually spoke up. And what I had to say was this: it is plain to me that a life that includes deep resentment leads only to futility and happiness, to the precise extent that I squandered hours that might have been worthwhile, and I squandered those for 16 years. But with me, the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, and I killed my spirit through that time. This business of resentment was infinitely grave, and it was infinitely grave. I found that it was fate. I found that when harboring such feelings, I shut myself off from the sunlight of the spirit. I found that the insanity of alcohol returned, and I drank again. And then when I drank, I died. And I died for 6 years, and everybody gave up on me. All of my family, all of the people in AA, all the people in the church, all of any employers, any friends, every single person gave up on me. And then finally, I gave up. Because I tried every single way I could to get back to you guys, right? Without giving up this resentment, because I couldn't give up this resentment. Sometimes a resentment, if I don't go in a four step and do this work on this resentment, because sometimes when I have a justified resentment, it can be so strong and so powerful. It felt like I would have been disloyal to my daughter to forgive anybody. It felt like if I forgave God, if I forgave those doctors at Children's Hospital who gave her that bad medication that was eating her kidneys up, if I forgave those doctors who made a decision to murder my daughter, if I forgave them, if I forgave any of these people, and if I just stopped being angry, that I would have been disloyal to her, and I would have been cheating the memory of my daughter. I don't know if any of you guys ever saw the movie John Q. There's a movie called John Q with Denzel Washington, where Denzel Washington had a son. Denzel Washington's son had a heart condition, and he was in the emergent, and they took him there, and they were telling him that there was no money to do the operation. Denzel Washington rolled his son in the emergency room in the ER, and he had a pistol. And he said, you guys are going to give my son this heart. You're going to find this heart and give my, or you're going to take my heart and put it in my son. And he had a pistol. And I every time I couldn't look at that movie without crying, because I was thinking, I didn't do enough to save my baby. I didn't do enough to save my baby. And that resentment consumed me like that. In every area of my life, it was in every move that I made and everything that I did. The precise. This business of resentment is infinitely gray. And I know what it's like to have a resentment to lead me up. And so now I'm out there dying, right? I'm dying and I can't make it back to you guys, and everybody is giving up on me. And I don't know, because I tried every other way I tried everything I could do to get back to you guys. And then something happened. And I'm still angry. I'm still pissed at God. I'm pissed at you guys. And I'm having fantasies of going, making stealth moves to go murder a doctor at the hospital and stuff like this. I'm keeping up with the doctors. I never told anybody this. I'm keeping back of the doctors, right, who worked on her and who made these decisions. And one had got fired. And then they made Angela White rule at this hospital. Oops, I'm not supposed to say name. Oh, she's not alive. You said he's not alive. That was my daughter. And she, they made a, they have an Angela White rule at that hospital where they changed how they treated kids who were in that condition now, because the way they did it was wrong, and that contributed to her death and all that. I'm keeping up with everything. I'm consumed. This resentment has consumed me and taken me down. And now I'm treating it with the only way I know how to treat. See, it's so crazy because I got out the cage, right? Alcoholics Anonymous, we are, Ralph talks about it like a gorilla, like the gorilla is having his way with you, right? And it's like a gorilla in a cage, and the gorilla is having his way with you, and the gorilla ain't, and you ain't done with drugs and alcohol until the gorilla's done, right? Because that's how strong it is. You know, that once the gorilla gets, and the gorilla's, I was out of the cage, and I went there and put on my best cologne, and I started sweet talking the gorilla, and I talked my way back into the cage, and I couldn't get out for 16 years. And I said, all I want to do, gorilla, is I just want to go in here for a minute just to have a little relief, right? I said, I just want to go in here and spoon for a minute, right? And the gorilla started having his way with me, and now 16 years later, I'm out here, and there's no. And then my so-called girlfriend steals my mother's car out of her driveway where my mother was letting me live, rent a room in her house. And thank God that God doesn't need my permission in my life, man, because I was still cursing God on a daily basis, and I was still holding on. I was caressing that resentment. It's close to me like a lover. It's close to my best friend, right? I'm holding that resentment real close and real tight. But I made a decision to go back to that rehab, right? And I go to the rehab. My sponsor, I call him. He couldn't wait for my phone call. He got me in there in 2 days. So 2 days later, I'm walking the grounds with my head down. And that's when he walked up to me and told me to pick my head up. He said to God, he said, I'm a child of God, and God will put me through everything he put me through just to leave me out there like that. And God start working in my life and pouring grace on me without my permission. I'm still cursing God. But then came the hard part, because see, the turning point is always step three, where I'm turning my will and my life over, right? That's what it's all about, turning my will and my life over. And I got in there. And God's pouring grace, and I walk back in the never too early, and I'm on the third step, and we're on the third step prayer, and we're on our knees, all 300 of us in there or whatever, and we're holding hands, and Ronald's holding us down there, my brother who you'll see in here tomorrow, and he holds us down when he's doing that prayer, and we're on there, and I'm hurting my knees, and I'm cursing God while I'm down there, right? And we did the third step prayer, and then he holds us down there for a long time, holding hands, and I'm cursing God the whole time. I'm just cussing God, not believing God can do one single thing for me. The whole time I'm down there, I'm thinking my knees are hurting. Heck with God, and I'm cursing God. But I believe that you got it. And that was enough to start. And then we got to the fourth step. And that's where it got big. That's where it got real. Because then we got to that resentment. We got back to that resentment about my baby, right? And that resentment against God. And I put God on that fourth step, because we had a saying in Never Too Early. Ralph always talks about this. If you've been raped as a child, molested as an adult, if you've had your child who did nothing to nobody, tortured and killed, and I did nothing to nobody, and neither did she. And what we say is, do you want to be right or do you not? Do you want to be right or do you want to be free? And I put God on that fourth step, right? And when I put him on that fourth step, things started to look different. The fourth step of that resentment inventory. And I put him through the top. Things changed for me. I put him on the fourth step, put him through there, and things started to look different. I realized God wasn't the one that gave my little girl bad medication. The doctors at Children's Hospital. God wasn't the one who made the decision to murder my baby. I was the doctor at Cedar Sinai Hospital. And I had to get past a couple of other things, like the fact that I only had her for 4 years, right? You know, and what kind of guy would want that little girl to be tortured and killed and ripped out of my life so early? But when I look at the world differently, the world looks back differently at me. And that's what the fourth step is. That's what the third step and the fourth step is. It's about a psychic change. It's about the start of that psychic change. They talked about it. Silkworth talked about it in the doctor's opinion, and Dr. Young talked about it, and there is a solution. They both talked about having a psychic change and about mental rearrangements, right? And I talk about it differently. I say when I look at the world differently, the world looks back differently. The psychic chain, and I changed the way of my thinking by putting God on that fourth step and doing going that resentment inventory. And I realized things, and it's funny, we were sitting in Never Too Early, and I started reading that fourth, because like we're gonna do this week on Sunday morning at 9:30, we're gonna be doing the exact same thing. We're at that part of the inventory where we're gonna have people read all of their, like all the way across on somebody. And what we did is that day, Ronald let me, I raised my hand and Ronald called on me. Ralph wasn't there that day. You know, we were live then at Never Twirl. And I read all the way across with my resentment on God, right? I kind of remember it. And when I read it, something happened. That's when something changed in me. That's where there was a spirit. At no time before or since have I had any, it was almost like Gil's white light thing that happened that day. When I started reading across that resentment, and I got to the last part where we talk about the fears, and all the fears started pouring out of me. I was afraid that I was a bad father. That's why my daughter died. I was afraid because I didn't have any faith. That's why God didn't save her. I was afraid that maybe he let her die because I was going to do something bad in the future and he didn't want her to see it. I was afraid that I could never get sober again. I was afraid. I was afraid. I was afraid. I was reading all these, and I finished and I realized I had, my face was covered with tears, right? And I looked up and half the room was crying and the other half the room was comforting the people crying. And it was like a whole spiritual experience coming out of the resentment. And that changed my life. That changed everything that day. It's almost like I can feel it again right now. When I do the third step prayer, and I say I'm turning my will and my life over, what does that really mean? What that really means is I'm going to do all the rest of the stuff. I'm going to do things that are totally contrary to my nature. And I'm going to go into this fourth step. And I'm going to be totally honest about everything. And when I do that fourth step and do that fifth step, because it was almost like I was doing that fifth step. I did the rest of the fifth step with my sponsor. But I read that with Never. See, Never Too Early is a special place. It's almost like a magical place. When we were essentially, I don't mean to say anything different about how it is now, but when we were live, it was like everybody, we say things that, like, I know, like now, I was told I have some limitations on what I could say. No cursing, no last names. We don't have limitations. What we are, because what we, and nothing against here or anywhere else. What we, the only thing we're trying to do, and the only thing that I say about the fourth step, about any of this entire process, the fourth step, the fifth step, any of the rest of it, if I'm doing any of it for any reason other than to obtain and maintain a power greater than myself that can do anything other than fail, then I'm just doing mental masturbation. No, that's the only reason that I'm not doing it to get smarter. I'm not doing it so I can be an expert on the big book. I'm not doing it so that I can get promises. I'm not doing it So that I'm doing it so that I can get in touch with a God of my understanding that can do anything other than me. And that power, and the way that I hold on to that power, that I help you guys get to the bottom. That's the only way I can. I think I told you I was going to end early. What I do, I looked at this time and I said, oh, I got 4 minutes left. But you know what? God has got me finished. I stop whenever I get done. I want to thank you, Sherry, for inviting me out. I want to thank you guys for listening to me on the 4-Step. My name's Reggie White. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for allowing me to share.